now it's started. Yep.
Okay. So is it just us four for now?
I guess so. But since we're since it's about the four of us, I guess it's all right.
Yeah.
I got an email from Sterling. He said that he and John won't be able to make it, but Marcia should be joining us.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Does everyone have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I could so use an extra couple of days off.
I know.
Yeah. I could go for another week off.
Yeah. But I guess not.
Yeah. Soon it will be Christmas, so then there will be more time off.
So I'm curious, did the process of making the concept map, did anybody find that helpful research-wise, I guess?
I think it only helped in realizing how broad our topic was. I don't know.
So, yeah, I don't know that it necessarily helped me research-wise, but, you know, it had me think about the teaching that I'm doing myself about where is it that I place emphasis on different things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not, you know, from a research point of view, oh, my, you know, that's, it was kind of scary.
Yeah,
as I was making it, I thought that was really helpful for my planning for next semester.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it forces you to see where the connections are, but
yeah.
there just seemed to be so many connections that it was hard to think of it as supporting research.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah, I agree as well. I keep trying to think of how it could be useful to help shape our learning trajectories, but I'm not sure.
So,
I liked Stacy's mapping, though, where she had like her various arrows and, you know, informal inference used to explain like distribution or a tool, just kind of little descriptor words in between the arrows.
Mm-hmm.
But I still couldn't figure out necessarily how to relate that to what we want to accomplish with our research goals.
Hmm.
I think it also helped me realize that it would be a fun thing to assign to my students. To do that.
Yeah, I think, did we read about that in one of the research papers?
I think so. Having
mm-hmm.
Wasn't that what one of them did, was having students create concept maps at various points?
Was that Lipson that did that?
I think so.
That sounds right.
Anyway, so as of our last meeting, had we sort of settled on sampling distributions to be one of the focus or one of the foci of the research, or were we still sort of fishing around a little bit? I couldn't quite remember.
I think sampling distribution was definitely in the mix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the top, maybe. And also, I think we've all been kind of focusing on wanting to study the learning trajectory. And I think the informal to formal learning trajectory might be too big of a trajectory to start with.
I think you're right. It is too big as a starting point.
I think maybe we should talk a bit more about these learning trajectories and using some models that are already out there from the research. So, like, Erin, I'm just reading through the email you sent me,
mm-hmm.
And I think, like, APOS could be a good potential, you know, is there a way for us to look at a couple different frameworks, like potentially APOS, and then like combine that with something else. I didn't read through that paper yet, But it seems like that might be a useful process for us to start to think about some learning trajectories.
Do you know, Jen, do you know of any papers that, I guess, that talk about learning trajectories and any other sorts of studies?
I feel like, well, I didn't know that there was the APOS article specifically in statistics. That's been used a lot with functions
mm-hmm.
and calculus. In terms of learning trajectories, I feel like one of my colleagues here has done some work with that, with abstract algebra. So I might be able to ask him. And then that Saldana paper talked about it a little bit, right? Lewis's
yeah.
paper had some that later paper had some sort of discussion around a learning trajectory that they used in their teaching experiment, right? Am I mistaken in thinking that?
No, I think that's right.
Okay. So I feel like we have some, I mean, I feel like there's enough background literature on the discussion of teaching experiments in general and then, like, creating, like, hypothetical learning trajectories for students. I know that Sean, one of my colleagues here, has done a lot of work with abstract algebra teaching and has done work with that, creating a teaching experiment around, you know, students sort of reinventing certain ideas in abstract algebra, and, like, he created hypothetical learning trajectories for that.
So it seems like one of the things that we would need to do is decide on a more focused content area, I guess. Because I'm assuming, like, if we look at what Sean did, was he doing... Well, he was in the guided reinvention stuff. Do you
yeah.
remember, like, what topics he was having them reinvent?
He was really specific. Like, he picked, like, two big themes from abstract algebra. So one of the ones that was primary for him was this notion of, like, group and what constitutes a group. And so he had students working with, like, symmetries of a triangle and symmetries of a square. And he had some really focused activities around that. And then as part of that, like, he didn't just, you know, define group for them and then, you know, discuss the structural properties of a group. He had them try to, like, work with the symmetries of a triangle and then through, like, their thinking about that and what developed in those activities start to define the structure.
So it sounds like that's basically a way to develop a potential learning trajectory, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we would need to maybe pilot some things initially to see, you know, to get a sense to build
right.
some sort of framework from. But it seems like we're going to want, like, he didn't try to tackle all of abstract algebra. You know, he picked
right.
sort of two fundamental areas and then, you know, spent a lot of time working with students. I think that the second one he did was isomorphism or something like that. And so, like, we might want to pick one or two ideas really carefully within statistics, with, like, in an intro stats course, and then think about how we want, you know, how we want to get at that and, like, what sort of activities, if we want to try and start working within some of these, you know, thinking about, like, a teaching experiment. I don't know if we want to, like, take the route of guided reinvention, but I'm just thinking there's, you know, SOLO has been, like, a primary model, and I think Aaron's right about this idea of, like, a fine-grain thinking. Like, I don't know that SOLO gets at that. And, like, if we can try and work a framework around some things that are already out there and start to, like, you know, sketch out what that might look like and build some activities for one particular topic in that area, then we could, like, pilot those and then, like, go back and revise our frameworks and then try a teaching experiment from there.
So, for example, if we decided to do, like, would sampling distribution be a either large enough or small enough topic to work with, for example?
I'm sure it's large enough. It's whether it's too large.
Yeah.
And what is it that we would want our intro stat students to know about a sampling distribution?
Well, one thing that is potentially interesting in that Saldana paper, in one of Lewis's papers, he spent a lot of time talking about, and I've seen this in my math for elementary school teachers when we do the statistics section, and we do a lot of sampling activities. It seems to me that students sort of get the idea that it's natural to take more samples. And I think that we already know from the literature that it's difficult for students to sort of recognize when they're building a sampling distribution that they're looking at a distribution of means, right? But it seems to me that there is something else that came up in Lewis's paper where he talked about students wanting to, when they collected more samples, instead of looking at the like mean for each sample and looking at that distribution, that they just wanted to pool everything into one big sample. And I've noticed that in the courses I've taught with teachers when we do a lot of sampling activities. So, I mean, it could be an interesting and very narrow focus to, like, think about the pros and cons, like, to try and develop something around, you know, why one might want to have all these little samples or smaller samples and look at the means for each of those samples as opposed to pooling all those samples into one big sample, for instance.
Now, is that something of an epistemological obstacle? So I was thinking about this, I don't know when I was, maybe I wasn't even really thinking about it, but like the reason for taking all the samples, my understanding was that it's really just hypothetical samples that we're taking. And of course, in real life, you only take one sample and you just make it as big as possible, right?
Right.
So is it, and I don't know all the details of what epistemological obstacles are, but it's essentially this like big concept that people just struggle to understand. And it seems like the idea of hypothetical repeated sampling to construct this hypothetical sampling distribution is just this big idea that, you know, we use it, like sometimes we have students in our class sample repeatedly for pedagogical purposes, but it's not what they would actually do. And in some sense, like the instinct to just pull all of your samples into one big sample is what you would do in reality when you're actually surveying, right?
Yeah, and I think that's maybe one reason why it's like difficult to get them to think about it, because you're right. I mean, it is. It's like in theory we would, you know, collect these over and over again and then look at the means for each one, but we don't have to do that because we're basing the practice on that theory.
Right.
And I think, so it's like, I think it's really counterintuitive because, A, students are like, well, if you would never actually do that, I mean, it's hard for them, I think, to step into that, like, hypothetical mode.
Yeah.
Do any of you guys teach bootstrapping in your intro stat class?
Absolutely not.
No.
Well, I mean, not specifically bootstrapping, but just resampling from a sample.
Because
I found, like, we spend maybe a couple days on that idea, and I think it helps the students think about what would really happen if you were resampling from a population, I guess.
Hmm.
Because bootstrapping is essentially estimating the sampling distribution. And I've had, I taught that to them before we talked about sampling distributions. And I think it may have helped this semester that I did it in that order. So it might be one sort of topic that we might want to do, unless we want to stay away from bootstrapping. But I think it's useful for the thinking.
I think that could be potentially interesting. I mean, one of the things I think we've seen from the literature is that, like, even, I mean, the Chance, Garfield, and Delmas paper, you know, that even with time and computer simulations, that those ideas are really challenging for students. And are there some, you know, some newer ideas like bootstrapping or something that doesn't fit into the traditional curriculum that would maybe be better used to support student learning? I mean, I don't know if, like, we want to, like, all of a sudden, I don't know if that's getting us off topic or, like, off of our sort of original ideas, or if we can, you know, think about incorporating something like that and seeing what happens and seeing if it could be a good, you know, pedagogical tool in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that it might fit well into what we're doing at a slightly later stage? Because my impression is that what we've been talking about is starting off with trying to describe the learning trajectories and then following that up with finding pedagogical methods to help students move along those trajectories. So it could be that, you know, we go out and we describe, well, here's the things students have to go through or the conceptions they have to build in order to understand what a sampling distribution is. And then as a follow-up, we might say that potentially that bootstrapping or techniques like bootstrapping might be a good way to help students build those conceptions. And then we could actually try it out and see if it helped. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
So just maybe that's a little bit further down the road, that we first need to, like, start with building a framework for those trajectories. Is that sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then if we had a framework, we could say, you know, here's X, Y, and Z. These are the three things, the three schemas or objects or whatever that students need to construct along the way. And then here's how we think this specific pedagogical technique will help them do that. And so that might be a follow-up in which we actually described, using our framework, how students constructed those ideas through the process of bootstrapping.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys thinking that this framework that we're building will mainly come from the background literature? Or are we going to try to do things in the classroom that kind of surveys what the framework would be getting at? Or both?
Well, depending on the framework, it could be both. So the APOS framework, at least the people who use it, for them it's more than just a theoretical interpretive framework. They have this whole process where first you start out, you build what's called a genetic decomposition of whatever concepts you're looking at. And then you gather data from students, usually through interviews, to see if what students are saying tends to support your ideas of what the concept actually is. And then you go back and you refine your decomposition, and then you go back and gather more data. And basically you sort of inductively build up this description of the cognitive processes that students are using to think of whatever concept you're working with. But you start out, like, the genetic decomposition that you start with usually comes from either the literature or your own experience or a combination of both.
Okay. So it sounds like our best move would be to really examine the literature with this focus of building a framework in mind. And then once we have a good framework that we're thinking about, then we can start interviewing students and trying to test if that's relevant or valid.
And Stacey and Sean, have either of you guys read anything about APOS theory before?
No.
I haven't.
I haven't either. I haven't heard of it until Aaron brought it up.
Okay, so Aaron, do you know that paper that you sent us, would that be enough to, like, give folks the background so that we could maybe, like, for our next meeting, try and start to like, come up with a genetic, like, you know, from the readings that we've done so far, like, a genetic decomposition for a particular topic?
I think that paper might not be the best one.
Okay.
But there are lots of, I have... I think as of 2 years ago, I had read most of the APOS papers that were out there.
Okay.
So I could certainly send one around that would be, I think, a little more general, because that one had talked about the results more than providing a bunch of examples of genetic decompositions. But
there's like a Cottrell and, like, I forget who the other authors are.
Yeah, there's a couple from the mid-90s where they started getting into the calculus stuff.
Okay.
And some of those might be good. And there was also the one, I think it was in, what's that, Research in Collegiate Math Education. I think either, maybe 10 years ago, but it has sort of the overview of the APOS theory.
So it might be good if you have a bunch of those, if you want to, like, send one out to everyone that's sort of like a nice general description. Because then it seems to me, like, I kind of like this idea of, like, of us trying to, again, like, I don't feel like we need to be reading more stats education literature now. Like, it seems like to me we have a few, like, seminal pieces and then some other pieces that we've all read, that if we want to kind of stick with this idea of learning trajectories, and we want to, you know, we've seen, or we've all read a little bit about the SOLO model, at least in Mike's handbook chapter.
Yeah.
And so it seems like if we want to try and get to, like, a more fine-grained analysis to see if we could apply this APOS idea for stats education, that, like, maybe we read the one article that you have that does that you sent us, and then another article that just more generally describes genetic decomposition and the action process object schema.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's something we could all work on for next time, is, again, sort of within, you know, the Saldana Thompson work and the and then what was the other papers? The Chance
article.
Yeah, that we like, again, sort of keeping those in mind, that we start to try and do that for ourselves, and then again compare. You know, I mean, we realized how hard that was just building our concept maps for things, but I think, like, I mean, as I did that, I realized, I was like, well, wait, I feel like we more need this framework, and, like, and then your idea to maybe get rid of the SOLO and put in the APOS, like, I think that could potentially be a really good option for us to, like, continue to focus in on.
Okay, I'm going to ask the stupid question. I don't think I have the article. Was this sent to us and I have accidentally deleted it, perhaps?
Aaron sent out an email, I think, yesterday sometime.
Yeah.
Right.
And in his email, there was a link to an article.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at his emails just trying to figure out where's this attachment. Okay, it's because it's not. All right.
No, it's just a link in there.
Now I get it. All right.
Yeah.
So
it seems like then that would be, like, two articles, so we wouldn't be, like, overwhelmed with reading.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can continue to kind of, because I think what we need to do now is sort of think about how we can maybe work with some of the frameworks in the mathematics education literature and then put that with what we already know, like, within stats education on sampling distributions and formal and informal inference. And then I think that's going to help us narrow in, because we want to try and start to figure out what frameworks are out there that we can make use of in a good way to get at building characterizations of students' cognition, you know. And I think this might help us focus in. So I don't know what you guys think about that, but...
Yeah, I think that sounds good. I think we also, I don't know if we've focused our topic really, like the framework, the learning framework for what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're kind of orbiting around the informal, formal inference idea, but I think we should try to make it more specific before making these frameworks, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
Does anybody have strong opinions about any topic?
Not really. I know sampling distributions, something with that is interesting to me, but I'm flexible.
I think maybe if we're taking with like thinking about this potentially with this APOS lens, I feel like that's something new to the literature, and I think potentially looking within sampling distributions about, since that sort of sets the stage for starting to build informal inference, and then hopefully formal builds off that the sampling distribution could be a good place to start within there.
Yeah.
So sampling distribution, all right.
And we certainly, if nothing else, we have a number of articles that already talk about sampling distributions that we've read.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So we're at least starting from not ground zero.
Right.
And Aaron, were you thinking... Of within that, also looking at, like, the conceptual procedural distinctions?
Yeah, I think that's something that, well, I feel like we have at least three potential frameworks that might be complementary in some way. So, for example, so I'm not sure that SOLO and APOS necessarily rule each other out in some sense.
Okay.
Like my, at least the APO part of APOS, which stands for Action Process Object, it is really talking about the cognitive objects and processes that students construct. And I feel like at least that could be compatible with SOLO, because SOLO is about these broad stages.
Right.
And APOS is more about, like, within each stage, what things do you construct? And the same thing with procedural and conceptual. And I feel like that might just be describing different types of things than APOS does. So I feel like this might be a place where, as we think about sampling distributions, it would be good to have, I guess, use all of these different frameworks as different lenses and just say, okay, and here are the issues that we see students having with this aspect of sampling distributions, and it looks like a combination of APOS and dividing things into procedural or conceptual would be a good way for us to organize what we see.
So, Aaron, can I clarify? You said three potential frameworks. Does that mean SOLO, the APOS, and then the conceptual / procedural?
Yeah.
Okay. Just so I write it down correctly.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe as we... Like, as we all read the two articles on APOS, that might help us a little bit. And then we may need to read some articles on, like, the conceptual procedural distinction, or at least maybe that part of that book chapter,
yeah.
I think, like, Hebert and Lefevre or something like that, are the, like, sort of... original, like, authors that I can think of that sort of brought up this distinction between conceptual and procedural knowledge. but I think even like, have you read Leaping Ma's Profound?
Puffin?
Yeah.
Mm. Is it Profound Understanding of Fundamental Mathematics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So that might potentially be useful there too, but I think we should maybe just start with the A post, but we can start to see, because I think at some point if we're going to like sort of in some sense combine or make use of a few different frameworks, that we're going to want to be specific as to how we're integrating them.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Jen, do you know of some like seminal papers with the conceptual procedural thing?
Yeah, I think so. If Aaron sent us the A post one, then I can get some together for conceptual procedural.
Okay.
That would be fine.
Yeah, that would be great. I think I'm behind in all the literature stuff over you guys.
Well, a lot of these I think Aaron and I have read just through our mathematics education degrees,
mm-hmm.
and I think that we're going to, as a group, need to be able to talk about some of those if we're going to use that literature to help us with the stats ed stuff.
Yeah.
And one thing that we might think about as, and I'm not sure if this would come from reading the APOS article or if it would just come from thinking more about concept maps is, so APOS, you do this thing called creating a genetic decomposition, which feels a little bit to me like making the concept map. So as we're doing this reading, we might want to think about or even make concept maps or something like a concept map for sampling distributions.
Hmm.
And hopefully it wouldn't be, I have this feeling like it might get really complex with lots of arrows connecting everything. But I think regardless, if we're interested in looking at what students' mental conceptions are of sampling distributions, then we'll need to break it down into what we think all the little component pieces are.
Well, that the Lipson article does that exactly. They have that, quote, expert concept map for a sampling distribution.
Right, right.
And so maybe we could build off that if we're thinking of making one for sampling distribution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or even just to keep that in the back of our mind.
Yeah. If nothing else, it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Where was... Oh, that's probably on the website, isn't it? On our group. Aha. Excellent.
That is so nice that you did that, Stacey.
Yeah, I think it worked out well. So that's a good reference.
Yeah. Sweet. So I guess one thing we might take a look at the Lipson concept map and see if we think it's complete, I guess. And then also compare that to, I guess we could compare it to a number of things. We could compare it to the procedural conceptual distinction. Right? Like what are the procedural aspects of each of the pieces of the map and what are the conceptual aspects? And we could also compare it to or look at it through an APOS lens when we're thinking about these things called genetic decompositions. If those are a lot like the concept map or if they're different in some way.
I think that sounds like a good plan. I feel like even though we're still sort of meandering, I feel like we're starting to focus in a little bit. And I think that having some frameworks for us to start to piece together some of this stuff is going to be useful, especially if we want to, like, kind of continue with this. I mean, just, down the road,
yeah.
Like, having those frameworks in place is going to be pretty foundational.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I guess we need to make sure that we're careful about is, I think these frameworks will be useful in helping us focus our research question and focus our inquiry. But at the same time, I think we should be careful not to let the framework dictate everything that we're going to do.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen people say that or decide that they're going to use a particular framework, and then they sort of feel like they're just beating their heads against the wall trying to make a framework apply to a situation
where
it might not be the most optimal thing.
Right.
So as long as we just, particularly when we're actually collecting data, if we start collecting data and we use this framework to, whatever framework, to look at it and it doesn't quite make sense, then we just need to keep in mind that we can make our own framework. Which I know that's something that I've succumbed to in the past. Being a slave to a framework. And I'll probably succumb to it in the future again, but there's worse things to do.
So, can we try to summarize at this point what we've already done? I feel like I'm hearing that, Aaron, you're going to figure out some of the APOS papers,
yep.
One or two to send out to us that would be good to read, and
yep.
Then Jen, you're going to look at the procedural conceptual.
Yep.
And then from those papers, we should try to start developing our own framework or mix of frameworks as applied to sampling distributions. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
And so we're going to have another conference call towards the end of December, beginning of January?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Do you guys think it's possible? Like, I don't know what everyone has going on or plans for the holiday, but I'm wondering if we, like, tried to maybe like a week before. I think Aaron was more on top of this, but like maybe like a week before we're gonna get together again to like send out our our concept maps and comparisons with the various frameworks, so that we have a chance to, like, look through things and then maybe, like, develop questions or specific things we want to talk about from that for the phone call.
All right.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
I have trouble doing things without deadlines.
Yeah, me too. Usually when Aaron sends something out and then I'm like, oh, yeah.
We should have thought of that. So when are you thinking our phone call will be?
Well, I don't know. This is maybe going to be tricky, but I don't know. Let me just look at a calendar. Given that it's sort of the next time we would naturally talk would be sort of over the holiday break, it could be like Monday, January 4th.
Yeah.
Are folks around then?
Yep.
Yeah.
I am around, but I have something that particular day.
Okay.
I don't have school that starts until the 25th of January, so I'm free pretty much any time that week.
January
4th, whatever.
What about the 6th, like Wednesday?
Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, I have no restrictions on that Wednesday.
Okay. And Aaron, how about you?
I am on break starting the 22nd or so.
Ugh, so nice, that semester schedule.
Oh, you're on the quarter schedule?
Yeah, we start up again on the 4th.
If it makes you feel better, we have final exams on the 23rd.
Oh. Okay.
And if we have snow, we have final exams on Christmas Eve.
Are you serious?
That is our fallback position is if it snows, we have final exams on Christmas Eve.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yep.
So what time on the 6th would work for everyone?
Should we keep it at the same noon Eastern time?
Yeah. That works for you.
It's me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're the one that's got the biggest schedule issue at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, that's perfect for me.
So, yeah, fine. Noon will work.
All right.
Let's see here. January 6th.
So then that means we should try to send out our stuff to each other by December 30th, looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to break into the office.
I'm trying to think if there's other things that we need to discuss yet. Was there anything else that people wanted to talk about? Sounds like we kind of have a good plan.
Do you guys remember, this is not anything to do with our work right now, but I think Sterling sent something out about the whole group having some kind of call.
Oh, that's right.
Let's see if I can find that real quick. So yeah, he had sent something out, but I forwarded, I know I responded to Joan about it because it was, you know, send the responses to her, but I haven't heard anything since then.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah,
okay.
Because that was supposed to be December, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so I was just curious, like, because it also sounded like at some point. And then are any of you guys going to the joint meetings this summer?
In Vancouver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually need to start working on that. I don't have a passport.
Okay.
So I actually need to do that first.
So it seems like, I think Joan was saying something about maybe like discussing where we're at or something then,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah,
so.
I think she... oh, never mind.
Is anyone going to the joint math meetings?
I am, actually, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll okay. See. No, I mean, I'll be there, so maybe we'll meet up for a little bit while we're out there. Well, while I'm out there and you're down there.
Right, yeah. And then in that same email from Sterling, they were talking about being a presenter, but that's for JSM, right? That's for
yes. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. And I don't think I'm going to be at either of those, but I think I'm going to be at the ICOTS conference, which is just before the joint meetings.
Mm.
And that should be a useful place if we have any ideas or questions or anything, because there should be like stats educators from all over the world there.
Mm-hmm.
Where is ICOTS?
It's going to be in Slovenia.
Oh.
Are you going to present anything there?
Yeah, that's my plan. Mm-hmm. I think Mike and I are trying to, we submitted a paper for stuff that we had done when I worked on that grant with him. So if that gets accepted, I will be in Slovenia this summer, which should be really nice, actually.
Yeah.
So I guess the next conference call, we should talk about, I guess, who of us would want to present at JSM, because it looks like you need to register by February 1st to be
okay.
At, but it could be multiple people of us, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll help when they send out another email about that December thing, because hopefully that will make things more clear of what we need to do for the JSM presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else that you guys can think of?
Why don't I go ahead and follow up with Sterling on whether they plan on getting all of us together, for a phone call, this month.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Okay, cool.
So I think I'm the only one that doesn't have an assignment. Should I do anything?
Well, for the moment, until they send us stuff to read.
I'll do reading. Right.
Okay. I'll
be better at sending out stuff earlier.
It'll be our New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to having a little more time over break to read more in depth into this literature, because once the semester started, that was more of a side project, and I was just reading the stuff that we were having to read.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was in the same boat as well. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, maybe now we'll finally have a chance to catch up.
Right.
Maybe.
Okay, so January 6th, Wednesday at noon Eastern time again. And then I'll send out the minutes when I get them written up.
Good enough.
All right, okay. Sounds good.
All right, very good.
All right.
Take care, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye.
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 Thank you. Please stand by.